agenda with 11 people testifying, 12. And we are having a all over the state testifiers for what they're looking for in a capital investment bill. So coming up first, we have Mr. Craig Johnson, the Senior Intergovernmental Relations Representative from the League of Minnesota Cities. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Johnson. State your name for the tape, and you can go ahead and begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Just very briefly, for those who are not as familiar, the League of Minnesota Cities is the statewide association. We represent the cities of Minnesota on a wide range of issues. And if something comes up here that would affect cities in some way, we're always happy to show up and try and explain how we feel it would affect cities and how we could make it work better if it need be. The state of Minnesota has 856 cities. 841 of those are now members of the League of Minnesota Cities. We have 15 that are not. I did my math wrong there, but no, that's right. The 15 that are not are all under 200 in population, and if they call us, we'll still help them, but they don't have a regular daily need for our services. So on behalf of Minnesota Cities, I want to thank you for this opportunity to make some comments. We have a very strong need for the state's partnership as cities look at how they're going to meet the infrastructure needs they have for their communities, both to keep them healthy, safe, and thriving, but also to allow them to have the capacity for growth and development as situations change around the state. I'm going to just run through the items that are typically within the capital investment budget that are of the highest interest on a regular basis to cities overall. Obviously, you have individual cities who come in for projects in their specific location. The League does not work on those individual efforts on behalf of those projects, but we do work very hard to make sure that there is adequate funding in all of the state pots for capital investment that would be available for cities to use for those projects. So, first ones I will hit are included typically in the Department of Transportation's budgets. They would include the local road funds, the local bridge funds. Those are very badly needed. As you know, transportation funding is always an issue. We have very, very few funds readily available, especially for local road projects at that level, because the state funds typically are on the bigger road projects that are MnDOT related, or they go to an MSA, you know, street of some kind that is in a larger city. And the local road and bridge fund goes for projects that are other than that and really is essential as cities look at how can we piece together the funding we need to update our transportation infrastructure. We always encourage strong funding in those pots of money, and you're going to hear from other people who specialize in those topics, so I won't go into that in detail, but I see their names on the agenda. So another transportation related item that again I will just mention, but there are other people coming who are working on that with the League, is the local road wetland replacement program. It's not a commonly known program, but it's very important. When the state decided prioritizing wetland preservation and restoration was a state policy, which was a long time ago back when I was a baby lobbyist, since then there has been a practice and a statute that says that if an improvement to a local road requires that it impact a wetland, the state will take care of the costs of mitigating that wetland impact instead of the city or county having to do it. And that fund is not adequately funded. And it is very important that it be adequately funded, or the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is not going to continue letting us use the streamlined process we use now when a local road impacts a wetland. And we can meet with you individually if that's an issue you want to hear more about, or you can ask one of the experts following me about it, but it really is a very important fund to meet the state's obligation to help local governments protect wetlands. The DNR has a pot of money that is very important for local communities, and that's their flood hazard mitigation program. It is a program that has very strict requirements. A project must be put on the list, must be approved, ends up being in statute as rider language as a specific eligible project. And it is very clearly laid out where those funds are necessary to protect both public and private infrastructure from flood hazard risks. And so we strongly encourage the committee to fund that pot consistent with what the DNR says the needs are for that. The biggest area that I am involved with and that you hear many, many, many projects related to every year is the funds going through the Public Facilities Authority that are available for local water and sewer infrastructure projects. So drinking water treatment, wastewater treatment, stormwater systems. We have several pots of money. Some are subsidized loans, some are grants, and the Public Facilities Authority manages all of those. When one of my members needs funds from it, they don't have to check to see which pot they qualify for. They complete the necessary engineering and proposal requirements, and the PFA identifies which pots they are eligible for, working with USDA Rural Development to make sure federal funds get maximized as we do that work. And so it's very user-friendly for cities to get into that process, and then it's just a matter of getting their score, which you guys all get updated on regularly, the list of the project priority list, and the funding determines how far down that list we can go with projects that have already been identified to be appropriate and to have their funding laid out in a way that you can see it. And then once that's done, we can just go down the list, and when they're ready to build, they get to build. Those programs are very desperately needing funds. The delay in getting bonding funding does have a very strict impact on that, and multiple years of delay can actually threaten the amount of federal funds we get through those programs. So it's very, very important that we meet those federal matching requirements for the state revolving loan accounts for both clean water and drinking water. We also have grant programs under that, the Point Source Implementation Grants Program, which goes for communities that have been identified that are meeting current environmental requirements but need additional pollution control because a pollution issue has been identified in the water that they discharge to. And so it's money the state puts in to help get additional protections on that beyond what our normal statutes require. And we have the water infrastructure grants, which makes sure very low-income communities can get the help they need when they just don't have enough people to afford the infrastructure. And Madam Chair, finally, I would just add, housing infrastructure bonds, while they're not typically general obligation, are a very important tool cities use as we try to address housing needs statewide and looking at where we can subsidize some of those efforts. And the economic development infrastructure programs through DEED that deal with infrastructure needs where it's being caused by a specific economic development are also a very useful tool as we look at expanding economic opportunities and healthy economies in our communities. The last thing I would add, Madam Chair, is we've had a discussion over the last number of years related to replacement funding and other preservation funding types of spending requirements on local governments that are trying to get assistance from the state. We have been working with the House and Senate chairs on that very closely, and we will continue to do that. But just know that we do have very strong concerns that we don't think it's appropriate that the state puts such big fiscal requirements in the place that you essentially need to have enough money to build the project on your own before you can ask the state for any help building the project. And we will be happy to keep working constructively with leadership to address that as needed. With that, I'm happy to stand for questions or to come back in the future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Members, any questions? No. Thank you. Next up, we have Ms. Emily Murray, Policy Analyst, Association of Minnesota Counties, and Joe Gustafson, Washington County Traffic Engineer, on behalf of AMC. Go ahead and state your name for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Emily Murray with the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC is a voluntary association representing all of Minnesota's 87 counties. One of our top priorities this session and last session was support for a bonding bill that includes investments in transportation-related programs, including the Local Road Improvement Program, the Local Bridge Replacement Program, the Local Government Road Wetland Replacement Program, and the Busway Capital Improvement Program. We want to thank you for inviting us to present today. We're going to focus on the needs of three of those programs, the Local Road and Bridge Programs and the Wetland Replacement Program. We've included some slides in your packet that provide background on the programs and also highlight the funding needs. I want to start by thanking the many committee members and other senators that have introduced and co-authored legislation this session and in previous years that would address funding for these programs. I'm going to talk about the wetland replacement program first. Minnesota law requires the Board of Water and Soil Resources to oversee the replacement of wetlands, wetland areas of public waters that are drained or filled by qualifying reconstruction, repair, and rehabilitation projects conducted by local road authorities. Having this program centralized through Bowser allows for predictable permitting for these projects, as well as larger and higher quality replacement wetlands, which is more cost efficient for taxpayers. For the purposes of mitigating unavoidable wetland impacts, the state is divided into 10 bank service areas. And you can see on the one pager that was included in your packet that five of these bank service areas have a balance of less than 1 year of demand. Over the interim, counties participated on a work group that was convened by Bowser and the Department of Transportation to review the status of the wetland replacement program and develop recommendations to ensure predictable and adequate funding to ensure its long-term viability. The work group recommendations include funding the program through a combination of operating budget and capital budget, and to pursue state and federal one-time funding that would provide some catch-up funding. Local agencies are working with Senators Herr, Johnson, Stewart, Eichhorn, and Lange on Senate File 1535, which includes both $15 million in GO bonds and $11.5 million in one-time general fund cash to sustain the program and address immediate needs, in addition to base budget funding for Bowser going forward. Looking to the future, annual funding is necessary to maintain and support the wetland replacement program, and the need is estimated at $9.5 million per year. And that's all for my comments, and I would ask to hand it over to my colleague Joe Gustafson to talk more about the local road and bridge programs.
Mr. Gustafson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Joe Gustafson, and I am the Washington County Traffic Engineer, and I am here today as a representative of the Minnesota County Engineers Association Legislative Committee. Counties are very grateful for the investments included in the 2023 capital investment package for the local road and bridge programs. This funding went a long way to support needed road and bridge projects across the state. The Local Road Improvement Program, or LRIP, has been very popular with counties, tribal governments, and cities of all sizes by providing state funds to leverage local dollars, turning critical projects into reality. During the 2023 LRIP competitive solicitation process, with $103 million available in the program, MnDOT State Aid received 378 applications from road agencies requesting $417 million in LRIP funds. 86 of these 378 applications were selected for funding, illustrating the popularity and competitiveness of this program. The total construction cost for all the submitted projects was estimated at $922 million, meaning that had they all been funded, the LRIP funds would make up approximately 45% of the construction cost, with 55% coming from other sources. The state's dollars stretch further when matched with local and other funding sources through this program, and together we can improve more miles of road than would otherwise be accomplished without your support. In recent years, Washington County has benefited from LRIP funding for pedestrian and bicycle improvements through downtown Willerney and Matamidi, using this funding exclusively to help reduce the cost share to each city. The program is also being used as part of the funding package to replace a hazardous and congested traffic signal at Highway 36 and Lake Elmo Avenue starting this year. The local bridge replacement program was established in 1976, and as funds are appropriated for the local bridge program, projects are selected from a compilation of county board and city council resolutions that comprise the comprehensive bridge replacement priority list. Currently, the five-year list of needs includes 948 bridges, with an estimated total replacement cost over $847 million. The money in the program has been exhausted, and there's a waiting list of ready-to-build bridge projects in the pipeline. The program is being used to help replace a deficient bridge over the popular Browns Creek Trail in Washington County this year. The 2023 session included many gains for transportation funding, but the need remains. MnDOT recently released its road funding gap report, which includes an $800 million annual gap for counties and cities on the state aid system alone, which does not include need on the local system. Support for a bonding bill that includes investments in the local and bridge programs, local road and bridge programs, will help to reduce that funding gap, which will help counties in building and maintaining a safe and well-integrated transportation system that efficiently moves people and products. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Gustafson. I have one quick question, and then I'll ask the members. I missed what you said about the Browns Creek Trail. If you can go back, and I didn't see it in my...
My statement was the program is being used to help replace a deficient bridge over the popular Browns Creek Trail in Washington County this year. That's this County State Aid Highway 5 Stonebridge Trail Bridge.
I like that bridge. Thank you. Members, any questions? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Murray. So I think the three of us, two of us, one on each side of me, have been pretty supportive. I think this is really, really important. The LRIP, the LBRP, and the wetland replacement, we really understand the importance of that. It just astonishes me that the governor does not have it in his budget. I'm just frustrated why he does not, and this should be in there. This is such an important thing for our state. So I can continue to support, and I think I have a few people next to me that are doing the same, but again, it just surprises me why the governor does just not have this in his budget. It's just crazy. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We're switching here so she can go present a bill now. So thank you so much for your testimony, and we appreciate you being here today.
Thank you,
Senator. So I believe next is, right?
Yep,
Bradley Peterson with Flaherty and Hood on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, my name is Bradley Peterson, here today on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and it is a great day to talk about infrastructure. The CGMC represents over 100 cities outside of the seven-county metro area and has always advocated for a robust bonding bill focused on the basic infrastructure that is the foundation for thriving communities across our state. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to these infrastructure needs today. While we support a number of programs that are typically funded by the bonding bill, I want to focus my comments on two that are particularly important to CGMC. The first of these are the water and wastewater grant loan programs funded through the Public Facilities Authority. Aging infrastructure and the need to respond to water quality concerns across the state make funding for these projects among the most critical needs that the Capital Investment Committee can address. According to a recent analysis of water and wastewater needs by the Minnesota Department of Health and the MPCA, there is an estimated $16.7 billion in needs over the next 20 years. Due to the rising needs and associated costs, this estimate actually grew by 22% between 2021 and 2023. On the back of the handout that we provided, you can see just a couple of examples of what are only a handful of the hundreds of projects that are currently awaiting funding. To address these needs, we're honored to work with our partners in the trades and with Conservation Minnesota to support Senate File 862, sponsored by Senator Johnson Stewart and others on this panel, which would provide a total of $299 million to the PFA to address these critical needs. This bill would also update the caps on grant and loan amounts per project from the PFA, which is necessary to respond to the quickly escalating costs associated with these projects. And so we ask that these measures be included in the next bonding bill. In addition to the PFA programs, we also strongly support funding for the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program, referred to as BDPI for short. This program has been around since the early 2000s and helps spur economic development in Greater Minnesota by helping to pay for the public infrastructure costs related to the expansion of current businesses and the attraction of new businesses and jobs to our communities. Through the years, this program has funded projects across the state that has resulted in thousands of jobs being created or retained, as well as millions of dollars in private investment in cities across Greater Minnesota. The handout that we provided gives you a flavor of the types of projects that have been recently funded and a complete list of projects funded since 2010. Recent grant awards from DEED have left the bucket of dollars virtually empty, making it very important for this committee to inject a new round of dollars into this program. It is especially important since the ongoing general fund funding has been slated for elimination under Governor Walz's budget proposal. While we hope to find a way to avoid these cuts, the prospect highlights the important role that this committee plays in bolstering economic development efforts in Greater Minnesota. Thus, we are grateful to Senator Jasinski for his introduction of Senate File 582 and Senate File 584, which would address both general fund and bond funding for this program. In conclusion, it is critically important for communities in every corner of the state that the legislature make passage of a capital investment bill one of its highest priorities for the 2025 legislative session. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to these important infrastructure needs in Greater Minnesota, and I'd be happy to take any questions or comments you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Are there any questions from members of the committee or comments? Great, thank you. Oh, Senator Jasinski.
Just again, once, thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Peterson. Again, this is really, really important for Minnesota. I've had firsthand eyes on what's happening with BDPI across our state, especially in my district. It's just such a great program that provides for investment in infrastructure that has jobs, great jobs coming for this, the industrial base. It's just really great. So again, I look forward to seeing this get funded. It is important, and a lot of people, you know, have had some higher interest rates lately, but a lot of times a real estate project will be dependent on real estate interest rates, and when they start going down, it's really important to have that fund full, ready to go for projects coming up. So great project, as well as the wastewater infrastructure, wastewater, so important as well. One of my districts in Waseca, asking for $8.9 million. They're actually pumping raw sewage into the lake in the summer months because of the INI issues. So the funding from these are so important. So thank you again.
The feeling is mutual. Ditto. So those great comments. Thank you, Senator Jasinski, and thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you.
Next, we have Paul Peltier, Executive Director of the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Peltier. I'm speaking on behalf of RAMS. RAMS is the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools. We represent the cities, townships, and school districts on the Iron Range. We are advocating here today for infrastructure, economic growth, and quality of life that our region depends on. Today, I want to be clear. RAMS's number one priority for the 2025 is the passage of a capital investment budget, a bonding bill, that will address the critical infrastructure needs of our region. This is not about politics. Our part of the state is represented by both Democrats and Republicans, and we expect them to come together to do what is right for northeastern Minnesota. Because it isn't just another bill. It's an investment in our future, our economy, and the basic infrastructure that every resident relies on. Your committee will likely see hundreds, if not 1,000, requests before it for capital investment. But let me be clear, we need a bonding bill that focuses heavily on water infrastructure. Too many communities across the Iron Range and northeastern Minnesota are dealing with outdated water and sewer systems. We have towns struggling with aging wastewater treatment plants that can't keep up with modern standards. We have drinking water systems that need upgrades to ensure clean, safe water for residents. These are not luxuries, they're necessities. They're the basic building blocks of can we afford to live the life in the place that we love. Without state support, small towns face the impossible choice of either raising local taxes to unaffordable levels or watching their infrastructure deteriorate. Many of us have seen this with our own eyes. The bonding bill provides critical funding to ensure that every community, no matter how small, has access to safe, modern, and efficient water infrastructure. The bonding bill is also about jobs. Infrastructure projects put people to work, plain and simple. When we invest in water treatment plants, roads, and public facilities, we are supporting local contractors, construction workers, and tradespeople who are the backbone of our economy. More importantly, strong infrastructure attracts private investment. Businesses looking to expand and relocate need modern utilities and reliable roads. If we want to keep northeastern Minnesota competitive, we must make these investments now. We all know that northeastern Minnesota is politically diverse. We have both DFL and Republican lawmakers representing our communities. And while they may not agree on everything, they must agree on this. Investing in infrastructure is not a partisan issue. For years, the bonding bill has been one of the most important bipartisan agreements in the legislature. It's how state partners with local governments to fund essential projects, projects that keep our towns running, our businesses growing, and our communities safe. But without a bonding bill, projects get delayed. Costs rise and communities suffer. That's why RAMS is calling on lawmakers from both parties to come together and pass a strong bonding bill in 2025. This is our number one priority because it affects every single resident of northeastern Minnesota. It's about ensuring clean water, creating jobs, and keeping our infrastructure strong. To all of you, our state legislators, come together, get this done. Our communities are counting on you. And to our residents, make your voice heard. Call your legislators, attend meetings, and tell them how important these investments are to your community. By working together, we can hopefully secure the future for northeastern Minnesota. Hopefully, we can get this bonding bill done. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Peltier. Appreciate it. Is there any questions or comments from members of the committee? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the testimony. We know that's a very beautiful part of our state with specific needs and resources. And I'm just curious, how does the IRRRB funding play into or is available for any of these projects? I think perhaps last year, did they do some bonding? Does the IRRRB use its resources for bonding for some of these projects, or can it?
Senator, as you know, the IRRRB money is payment in lieu of local property taxes,
yes.
And that it's in addition to, not in place of, the resources that the state has. And our state has an obligation to all residents, no matter where we live in this state, to provide those opportunities for them to access those capital investment funds.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Thank you again, Mr. Peltier.
Thank you.
Next, we have Nels Paulson, Policy Director at Conservation Minnesota. Welcome, Mr. Paulson.
Greetings, Senator Pappas, Senator Housley, members of the Senate Capital Investment Committee. My name is Nels Paulson, and I serve as the Policy Director at Conservation Minnesota. We advocate for sound environmental policies at the state legislature, and I represent our thousands of Conservation Minnesota members found in all of Minnesota's 87 counties. You may wonder what an environmental advocate is doing in front of you today, and the answer is very simple. I'm here because of two words, clean water. Those two words can mean a lot of different things to different people, but we know when you talk to regular Minnesotans, not lobbyists or special interests, the majority of Minnesotans want their state legislators to help ensure Minnesota has clean water. And this means clean water to fish in, clean water to swim in, and clean water to drink. This committee is uniquely situated to deliver on those expectations. Regular and robust bonding bills are one of the best ways to ensure Minnesotans can enjoy clean water. I like to say clean water starts at the tap. We know that when people, we know that for people to care about clean water in rivers, lakes, streams, and wetlands, first they need to feel confident in the water they drink from their kitchen sinks. There are two ways this committee can help Minnesotans feel confident about drinking the water in their homes. First, robust and regular investments in drinking water infrastructure can help cities and municipalities pump safe drinking water into the homes of millions of Minnesotans. Drinking water contamination is a serious issue across the state for a number of reasons. Sometimes humans have caused drinking water contamination, like PFAS contamination in municipal wells in the East Metro and across the state. Other times, we are learning that humans are not the cause of drinking water contamination, but that Minnesota's geologic makeup causes drinking water to be contaminated by chemicals like radium and manganese. No matter where the contamination comes from, this committee holds the keys to the solutions. We need to help communities invest in safe drinking water infrastructure. Another important action this committee can take is to help achieve the goal of replacing all of Minnesota's lead service lines by 2033. In the last few years, there have been important investments by the federal government and by the Minnesota legislature to begin to appropriate funding to replace every lead service line in Minnesota. We know there are at least 100,000 lead service lines in use today in just about every community in Minnesota. There could be thousands of more lead lines unaccounted for, but additional testing is necessary. This committee can build on the down payment made several years ago to help Minnesota homeowners and businesses who receive their drinking water through a lead service line. The cost of replacing all lead service lines in the state is a lot, likely between $1 and $2 billion. But when the legislature created the lead service line grant program, we got off to a good start to accomplishing the goal, and now we need each legislature, each biennium, to make the necessary investment to achieve the end goal, having all lead service lines replaced statewide by 2033. Finally, we know that if Minnesotans have confidence in the drinking water in their homes, schools, and businesses across the state, then they're more likely to care about the quality of our rivers, lakes, and streams. And the single best investment this committee can make to protect water quality in Minnesota's lakes, rivers, and streams is to help municipalities update and replace aging wastewater infrastructure. Millions of Minnesotans get their drinking water downstream from wastewater plants. It's in all our best interests, both for public health and for the health of aquatic ecosystems, to make regular and robust investments in municipal wastewater treatment projects. These facilities serve a critical role in protecting and improving the water quality of Minnesota's lakes, rivers, and streams. In summary, please remember that regular and robust bonding bills will significantly help deliver fishable, swimmable, and drinkable water in every Minnesota community. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Paulson. Anybody have any comments or questions? Senator Ann Johnson-Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to our testifier. As you were speaking, I was remembering the bonding tour that we took a couple years ago, and we were in a community who there was 25 houses, and every one of them had a failing septic tank in the backyard, and they were not able to afford the assessment for a $4 million interceptor to their to the closest treatment facility. So I was thinking of that, and indeed, it is a really big problem for small communities. So I look forward to seeing our bonding bills go towards wastewater and water treatment. But then the other thing I was thinking of, because I'm 60, is I remember our life. Yes, John. Senator Jasinski. I'm really 60. I remember growing up on Lake Pepin before the Clean Water Bill regulated the discharge of sanitary sewage directly into the Mississippi River. And it mandated that sewage treatment plants take out the storm water. And I'm just, I mean, I could talk about that for a long time, but my point is, for those of you that are my age, my age or similar, we remember when lakes used to be a heck of a lot dirtier, and that's because there was raw sewage. And then, a final note, I remember all the times I have traveled to nations that don't treat their sewage. So in case you're ever wondering that, why do these communities like Costa Rica and Bolivia, and even over in Europe, there's places where there is a garbage can for you to throw your tissue after you use it when you go to the bathroom? That's because they don't treat their sewage. So even in Brazil, they don't treat their sewage. It just goes in and gets diluted. So I know it's kind of gross to think about, but it also points out how important it is that we have this standard that we treat our sewage, and that some communities just can't afford to do that without bonding money. Hmm. So you're welcome.
I always wondered about those little baskets.
I'm pretty sure in Israel they have.
No, they treat their sewage.
Yeah, but yeah. It's surprising, even in Costa Rica, only 20% of the sewage is treated.
Hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Paulson. Thank you, Senator Johnson-Stewart, for that. Another engineering lesson for us. Margaret Donahue, Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. While she's coming up, I did want to say that if we didn't contact you and you're not on the list, I think we're going to have time to hear. I see we have some handouts from some people. So if you do want to testify, even if you're not on the list, you're welcome to come up and do that. Ms. Donahue.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. The Transportation Alliance is a statewide coalition. It includes local governments, so counties, cities, townships, It includes labor unions, the transportation industry, including engineering firms, contractors, suppliers, and representatives of all modes of transportation. We work together with our members to advocate for a safe and effective transportation system all across the state. And the bonding bill is also our top priority for the 2025 session. And hopefully you have this handout that shows the list of programs that have typically been included in capital bonding bills and the level of need that is there for all of these programs. You heard a lot about the local bridge and local road improvement programs, so I won't spend a lot of time on those, but you can see that the level of need is significant, and the funding for those programs that was provided in 2023, which we really appreciate, has been either spent or programmed, and there are lots of projects waiting for construction. We support GO bond funding for all modes, as I said, and projects and programs that have been in the bonding bill, including for transit, for ports and waterways, for rail. Those are all important areas that also need investments. We believe that a core function of government is the maintenance and improvement of roads, bridges, and other transportation infrastructure. And the really good thing is that state funding for transportation leverages significant federal and local dollars. For example, appropriations for the competitive local road improvement program from 2020, 21, 23 totaled $183.4 million in state funds. And that funding is expected to result in $337.5 million in federal, local, and other matching funds. So for the state funding that goes in, a lot more funding gets allocated and used for these projects. The five-year master bridge list that you heard about earlier and the need there is $227.6 million in state bridge funds. And that would leverage an additional $603 million in federal and local funds, allowing deficient bridges to be replaced in townships, small cities, large cities, and counties. The lack of a bonding bill in 2024 has left many needed transportation improvements waiting and growing more expensive. With the latest budget forecast, we understand that finding the funding to pay the debt service on GO bonds from the general fund will be more challenging. We urge you to pass the largest bonding bill that you can. And we also urge the legislature to pass authorization for additional trunk highway bonds with the debt service included in the trunk highway fund budget as opposed to the general fund budget, given that the capacity of that fund is available to support additional debt service. MnDOT's debt service policy states that debt service should not exceed 20% of annual state revenues into the Trunk Highway Fund. And the latest projections for the State Trunk Highway Fund show that the fund has the capacity to support over $600 million in additional trunk highway bonds. This session, legislators have introduced bills for many important trunk highway projects, and most of those would authorize additional trunk highway bonds. So projects including widening and improving US 169 from Taconite to Pengilly, Trunk Highway 14 in Byron, Trunk Highway 610 in Anoka, I-35 in Dakota County, Trunk Highway 65 in Ham Lake, U.S. Highway 10 in Sherburne County, Trunk Highway 55 in Hennepin County, and I-35 in Scott County, all would authorize trunk highway bonds to cover these costs. And all of these bills would authorize an additional $334 million in trunk highway bonds. So just as the legislature did in 2023, we urge passage of a transportation bill with additional trunk highway bonds that will be supported by the Trunk Highway Fund and a robust capital bonding bill with GO bonds supported by the general fund. Uncertainty at the federal level makes state funding all the more important this year. The Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act will expire in federal fiscal year 2026. And the Federal Highway Trust Fund has faced recurring shortfalls due to an imbalance between dedicated revenue deposited into the Highway Trust Fund and spending. At the federal level, Highway Trust Fund funding shortfalls have generally been filled by transfers from the Treasury's general fund. And these transfers have shifted a total of $275 billion since 2008, including $118 billion authorized under the IIJA in 2021. If reductions in federal spending impact those transfers in the future and spending needs to be reduced to match the amount of dedicated revenues in the fund, Minnesota will see a significant cut in federal transportation funds. We understand that there are many important infrastructure needs around the state, but transportation infrastructure truly serves a statewide function. Connecting the state together, moving people and freight with an industry that is ready to get to work, building projects that are waiting for funding. The funding you provide will make a difference for the state's economy in creating jobs, as well as improving the safety and effectiveness of the transportation system that Minnesotans rely on every day. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that thorough summary of where we're at. I appreciate that. Any questions, comments? Senator Dipple.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. We just came from the forecast briefing, the update, and I think the position now that the Trunk Highway Fund would support is almost $700 million, actually, in bonding, but for the, you know, the third, what do we call it, third
guideline.
Rule, third guideline, yeah. Appreciate your raising that subject and kind of how the Trunk Highway Fund works vis-a-vis its internal management of its debt position. But one thing we did hear about that was concerning, and wondering if you have any more information or can illuminate us on, you know, some of the discretionary grants that have been made through the IIJA that have been blocked now by the Trump administration. Do you have a sense of how much that is and what that represents in terms of activity and jobs and the like that now won't come to Minnesota because of blocking those funds by the Trump administration to Minnesota?
Ms. Donahue.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Dibble. I will try. As you know, there's just a lot of uncertainty and it's very fluid in terms of federal funds. From my understanding, the formula funds are continuing to go out to all the states and there hasn't been any disruption with that. But the discretionary grants and certain programs like the NEVI program, which was actually a formula program but has been paused. So that pays for EV charging infrastructure. And there are some other carbon reduction kind of programs that have also been paused. But the discretionary grants are really still a big question. Unless there was an actual funding agreement, like a written agreement, our understanding is that those are really up in the air. And there were quite a few announcements made in January. Minnesota, I think it was over $2 billion of announcements that were made for funding projects in Minnesota in January, but we're not sure of the status of that. Some of the congressional members seem to think that road and bridge projects will be fine. The Blatnik Bridge, obviously, is the biggest one of concern because without that federal funding, neither Minnesota or Wisconsin can afford to go ahead with that project. So we're watching it very carefully, but just waiting to see what will happen.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. We were able to put $200 and some million on the table as matching for, you know, these competitive discretionary grants. Which then allowed us to compete successfully for $1.5 to $2 billion worth of grants, which we had, you know, announcements and were awarded to Minnesota, but hadn't yet been, weren't, you know, they hadn't signed on the dotted line, and we're under yet contract. And so, as I understand, we're slated to lose about 15%, fully 15% of those funds that were going to be coming to Minnesota because of this kind of, you know, this block that's been placed upon those funds. So it's
did you say 15% or 50?
15.15%.
15%.
Yeah. So just, you know, hopefully it'll clear itself up. We'll see. You know, knock on wood. Those of you who have a little more influence in those realms, encourage you to pick up the phone. And here's someone who has a little more influence. Thank you.
Senator Jasinski.
Madam Chair, thank
you. He's about to pick up the phone.
Again, and I remind you, there's temporary pauses on a lot of things. And so going back to the Blotnick Bridge, none of that funding has stopped for that. That's going to continue on again. And what I'm hearing from a congressional delegation is they're going to continue on with road bridge money, continue on. There's some programs, again, that have been paused. But as far as the day-to-day funding for roads and bridges, it's not stopping. It's continuing on. And so things will keep moving here. And again, it's a temporary pause, and it's only been about 2 months. So we'll see what happens here.
All right, thank you so much, Ms. Donahoe. Next, Tim Werke with the Associated General Contractors on behalf of the Building Jobs Coalition.
Good afternoon, Senator, and members of the committee. Excuse me while we get connected here on our technology, but by way of introduction, my name is Tim Werke, and I serve as the Chief Executive Officer of the Associated General Contractors, and we are the state's largest commercial and industrial contracting association, a statewide organization with over 400 members. But I'm here today on behalf of the Building Jobs Coalition, and I'm authorized to speak for this group. And a couple of things in preference of my remarks. Here advocating the words of the day seem to be a robust and regular, consistent bonding bill. We advocate for that as well. But I'm here to mainly make the case, the economic case, for investment in infrastructure and a robust bonding bill. So as I cycle through five or six of these slides, I want to introduce you and remind you of who the Building Jobs Coalition is. The BJC, as we refer to it, was organized in 2008 during the throes of the Great Recession. And you can see the names of the organizations that are continuing charter members of the Building Jobs Coalition. These folks and these organizations represent the men and women in the organizations that both design, build, and promote the preservation and construction of Minnesota's capital assets. The leadership structure is a tripartite organization led by myself, representing the contractors, led by the executive director of the architects, the Association of Architects in Minnesota, and also by the executive director of the Minnesota Building Trades Council. We again advocate for regular, robust capital investments, not just to build the infrastructure, but to enhance and to grow the state's economy. So again, capital investment drives our economic future, and completing a robust capital funding bill that includes both design-ready and shovel-worthy projects is essential to sustain Minnesota's economy in times of instability. I would submit to you that oftentimes the bonding bill gets characterized as the dessert of the legislative process, but really what it is the meat and potatoes. Mm-hmm. Every $1 that's invested in capital asset construction is cycled through the state's economy and has a positive return on investment near or exceeding a 2-to-1 return. The Building Jobs Coalition can calculate this because we maintain an academia-developed calculator that can accurately estimate the number of jobs created or sustained through various types of investment in different assets in the state. And this was an economic predictive model that was generated by a professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And it's something that's available for you to utilize as well. Predictable, reliable cycle of capital budget bills allows the design and construction industry to remain healthy, stable contributor to Minnesota's economy, while also addressing chronic inequities in our infrastructure network that create family-sustaining careers. I would also submit to you that addressing capital needs in fits and starts is an inherently inefficient way to make those investments. It's more costly as it does not provide for level or predictable markets when pricing labor or pricing work itself. A significant portion of the projects proposed for capital investment in 2025 are deferred maintenance to existing buildings and upgrades to infrastructure. Again, it's imperative to plan and regularly address capital needs, as we all know that problems do not go away with time. They multiply and become more costly and more challenging. Finally, Madam Chair and committee members, our skilled workforce in this state is ready to put our pencils, our shovels, and all of our skills to work to help you create better communities around the state. Whether you may recognize it or not, Minnesota has one of the most efficient and productive construction markets in the entire country. We benefit from a highly skilled, a safe, and highly productive workforce. We have a robust and competitive market with a myriad number of contractors that compete for that work. Finally, we have a long track record of delivering economy and value to Minnesota taxpayers. I thank you for your attention. I again encourage you to stand behind a robust and predictable infrastructure investment bill this year, and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Beer, and thank you to all your coalition members. Any comments, questions from the committee? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, Tom. Oh, sorry.
No, that's
Senator Johnson Stewart.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I just wanted to share something. I was recently at St. Paul Tech or St. Paul College, and I was talking to a HVAC inspector, or I'm sorry, HVAC installer teacher about their program. And just to emphasize what you just talked about with the trades are ready to go. There was a young woman there who quit her job and as a church secretary and was back in school to be an HVAC installer. And she was getting she already had a job offer for $95,000 a year. Mm-hmm. She had 2 years of, well, she hadn't even finished her second year yet. But I just want to emphasize that when we think of the trades, mm-hmm. I mean, I was shocked, and I consider myself pretty knowledgeable about what tradespeople make. But there is a huge mm-hmm. opportunity here for employing people at really good paying jobs. And so just wanted to offer that up. Thank you.
I'm ready to leave the legislature and retrain.
It's walking distance to your house, Madam Chair.
It is close, right. Next, we have Colin Beer with the International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers, Local 10. Welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Colin Beery. I handle government affairs for SMART Local 10. We represent around 5,000 members in a variety of construction industries. We're mainly here to talk about bondlink, but would like to speak specifically on asset preservation. As you know, our state's facilities are in integral piece to our community in education, safety, and health, also providing a great deal of work hours for our members. Our members predominantly perform HVAC in the commercial space, installing, maintaining, and repairing ventilation systems while also testing, adjusting, and balancing these same systems. Many of these facilities not only need help in with the interior systems, but they're also declining exterior, which provide good jobs for our members working in the architectural sheet metal industry. A lot of the new fancy metals you see outside of buildings, the copper on the top of the Capitol here, the cathedral downtown St. Paul, all of those neat, cool looking metals on exteriors. Our members see in real time how facilities across the state have declined in the last decade. Facilities such as campuses on the University of Minnesota and state correction sites are declining. The U of M, with a backlog of billions of dollars worth of repair, and the state's correction facilities estimated at a backlog of over $700 million. We can appreciate that the state has a limited resource at this moment in time, and the modest request for HEPR and state correction facilities to update and repair. But to be clear, this is a drop in the bucket. We acknowledge that the state asset preservation does not always provide political points with constituents, but would hope that all our decision makers could see that these facilities owned by the state will only continue to deteriorate. Our members working hard each day to be smart stewards for these institutions and their facilities. We encourage the state to step up and do their part to support requested asset preservation needs this session and hold strong in the continued negotiations throughout session regarding bonding in our state facilities. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments and checking around for any members. All right, thank you very much. Then Mr. Tom Dicklich with Minnesota State Building Construction Trades Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Tom Dicklich. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. I'm here on behalf of over 70,000 women and men in the trades across the state of Minnesota. A bonding bill is more than an investment in infrastructure, it's an investment in people. It's about ensuring that Minnesota has the modern, reliable facilities and transportation networks that support our communities and economy. And just as importantly, it's about creating real life-changing opportunities for women and men who build this state. The construction trades are a path to a strong middle-class life. The jobs created through a bonding bill would provide Minnesota with good wages, health care, pensions, jobs that just don't support individual workers, but entire families and communities. For many of the trades, offer a clear, debt-free path to a lifelong career. When we invest in infrastructure, we are also investing in thousands of workers who take pride in their work, people who know that what they build today will stand for generations. Moreover, a strong bonding bill helps train the next generation of skilled trades workers. Many public works projects incorporate apprenticeship and workforce development programs, ensuring that young people and career changers have opportunities to enter the trades. This is especially important as a large portion of our skilled workforce approaches retirement. These investments not only create jobs today, but build a pipeline of talent that sustains Minnesota's infrastructure well into the future. Beyond the workers themselves, these projects fuel our local economy. When tradespeople have steady work, they spend money in their communities on housing, groceries, restaurants, and local businesses. This economic ripple effect ensures that the benefits of a bonding bill extend far beyond the job site. Investing in infrastructure is not just about putting shovels on the ground, it's about strengthening Minnesota's economy from the ground up. We also need to recognize that a bonding bill does more than create jobs. It builds the future of Minnesota. Every school we renovate, every road we repair, and every water treatment facility we modernize improves the daily lives of people across this state. It ensures that students have a safe place to learn, that businesses can move goods efficiently, and that families have clean and reliable drinking water. Infrastructure investments also help us prepare for our future. Our state is growing, our needs are evolving, and our infrastructure is deteriorating. A robust bonding bill gives us the ability to upgrade our infrastructure in a way that ensures it serves future generations as well as it serves today. While new projects are exciting, it's equally important to maintain and improve the public infrastructure we already have. The state has invested billions of taxpayer dollars into buildings, roads, and utilities, and preserving these assets is a fiscally responsible move. Whether it's replacing a roof, upgrading electrical systems, modernizing heating and cooling, or repairing structural elements, this is skilled labor that requires trained professionals. Every dollar we spend on asset preservation keeps tradespeople working and saves taxpayers money down the line. A strong bonding bill isn't just about construction, it's about building the opportunities, strengthening communities, and ensuring Minnesota remains competitive for decades to come. A bonding bill is about making smart, forward-thinking investments. It keeps our economy moving, provides stable jobs for thousands of Minnesotans, and ensures that the infrastructure we all rely on remains strong and resilient. The members of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades are ready to go to work. We urge you to pass a bonding bill that puts people to work, strengthens our infrastructure, and invests in Minnesota. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Mr. Dicklich, and thank you to everyone. Now it's kind of an open. Oh, turnover. Wait a minute. I didn't turn over the... Oh, John Pollard. There's a back. And John Thorson. Great. I wondered if you two were going to testify, and we're on the back of the page.
Good
Welcome.
Afternoon.
Please introduce yourselves.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having us. For the record, my name is John Pollard. I'm the legislative director to the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 49. We represent approximately 15,000 heavy machinery operators in Minnesota, North, and South Dakota. Our members take great pride in building and maintaining Minnesota's infrastructure, including roads and bridges, residential and commercial buildings, and the state's energy infrastructure. Our members also work in river dredging, in sand and gravel pits, building waste and stormwater systems, in broadband development, and in well drilling. I'd like to take this opportunity on behalf of Mr. Thorson and myself to thank the committee staff for putting us at the end of the agenda so nothing is left to be said. We appreciate the opportunity to speak in favor of your work in crafting a bonding bill. As members of this committee, you are well-versed in the needs of our communities, and you certainly don't need us to tell you. As you weigh these proposals, as Mr. Dicklich pointed out, it's important to remember the jobs that are created by these infrastructure projects. The jobs our members have are good-paying, family-supporting careers with excellent health care benefits and a pension that allows our members to retire with dignity. As Mr. Dicklich also said, these projects are an investment in people. You don't have to look too far to see the tangible results of the committee's work in the past. Whether it's trunk highway bonds that are helping support that Block and Bridge project in Duluth or fixing Central Avenue in Minneapolis, it's our members in those hard hats and work boots that are making our roads safer and newer. For those of us that live in the East Metro area, we got to watch this summer as Local 49 members dismantled the Kellogg Street Bridge so that it can be replaced with a new and safer building, safer system. We appreciate the work of the chief author and look forward to other bills that this committee passes so that our members can go to work and build our communities. Similar to roads and bridges, we'd love to build wastewater treatment plants in Stillwater, Brooklyn Park, Eagle Lake, Mound, and Waseca. It is these core infrastructure projects that are the foundations of our communities. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of a robust bonding bill, and I'm happy to take questions.
I don't see any questions, so go ahead, Mr. Thorson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Thorson. I'm legislative director for LIUNA, Minnesota, North Dakota. We're Minnesota's infrastructure union, representing more than 14,000 skilled construction laborers who build and maintain the roads, highways, bridges, and basic utilities that are necessary for our communities to thrive. I'm here today to express our strong support for passage of a bonding bill and to meet Minnesota's infrastructure needs. So in 2024, capital investment requests across the state totaled $7.6 billion, including $4.7 billion in state agency requests and $2.9 billion in requests from local units of government. Minnesota's transportation and water infrastructure needs are great, and capital investments can accelerate repairs to the over 600 deficient bridges, nearly 5,000 miles of highways rated in poor condition. There are also requests from communities across the state to repair wastewater treatment plants, stormwater facilities, and drinking water facilities that are often at or near capacity, or they can even be at or near the end of their useful life. These projects are critical infrastructure that allow communities to prepare for severe weather events, to clean up existing water contamination, and upgrade facilities to prevent pollution from happening in the first place. The legislature has only passed one bonding bill in the last 4 years, and we're not saving taxpayers or communities money by not having bonding bills. Instead, these projects are getting more expensive, more costly, and at times, and if not funded by bonding dollars through the state, the cost of these projects are passed on to taxpayers through higher property taxes and where they can have a higher impact on an individual or family's budget. Minnesotans count on bipartisan support to improve public safety and health through investments in transportation and water infrastructure, investments that truly are necessary to assure a quality of life. We're also very excited about the career and economic inclusion opportunities capital investments bring to Minnesota's construction industry through registered apprenticeship programs, the increased participation of women, people of color, veterans, and Madam Chair, career changers. If you're interested in joining the trades, I'm not suggesting you leave what you're doing now, but we're here to help you when you are. And career changers and others who are not yet fully participating in the economy to their potential. We know that a union card and prevailing wage is and always will be a ticket to the middle class. You might not get rich being a laborer or an operator, but you can provide for your family, have good health care, and you can that you can count on, and retire with dignity. So from upgrading outdated water and sewer systems to repairing crumbling roads and bridges, there's no shortage of critical projects that demand our attention to fix up and keep up with state and local infrastructure projects. They create thousands of good-paying jobs and careers while ensuring the safety and well-being of communities in every corner of our state. Layuna laborers are ready to get to the work, and we need bipartisan action from state leaders to keep moving forward and to fix Minnesota. Thank you.
Great. Thank you both very much. Now, is there anyone else that wanted to get their support on the record and come forward and testify? Great. And state your name for the record and who you represent.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Sherry Munyon, and I'm representing the Minnesota Public Transit Association. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm coming forward. The way things work at the Office of Transit, individual transit systems do not seek funding for capital improvement projects. Rather, they apply for their projects to be reviewed and approved by the Office of Transit. The Office of Transit keeps a very large list that not only includes large facilities, such as new bus garages, but it also includes existing facility rehabilitation, solicitation for technology equipment, such as fare collection systems, cameras, radios, and more. The Office of Transit will use flexible federal and state dollars to fund projects. So currently they have a list of 3 years forward of projects they have approved that are not funded. We are here with legislation this year that Senator Frentz is carrying for us, seeking a $10 million capital investment for large facilities. If that bonding is available for those large facilities, then all of the other smaller technology projects can move forward. So briefly, it's a very unique system, and so we don't have legislators coming and advocating for their individual projects. We have one request, which is not in the governor's request. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments from members? All right. Thank you, Ms. Munyon. Anyone else? Not seeing anyone rushing up here, then I would like to thank members for the meeting and thank you all who testified, and the meeting is adjourned.